गणितमनन्दस्य जनार्जनासलकया चक्षुस्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकजामायहं ददति सापनन्तिकम्। वंशकोपतुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यैश्च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। The Kumaras finished their preaching or explanation to King Prithumaraj. Interestingly, the four Kumaras are the gurus of the Gyanis. Previously they were great Brahmavadis, they were great impersonalists, and they were meditators and followers of the path of Gyan. Therefore, in their instructions to Prithumaraj, there were elements that showed their great knowledge of Gyan, and they were spoken. Some of the instructions were spoken in almost a Gyani type of way. But their instructions showed, as will become completely evident in the next chapter, their instructions showed that Jnana, as Krishna even explains in the Bhagavad Gita, has its use, but only in relationship to bhakti. It has its use, and its use is as a sadhana, or to bring one to the point of bhakti. And then when one is on the platform of bhakti, where one has taken shelter of the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, to cross the insurmountable ocean of the material energy, then one no longer needs that boat of jnana, or that sadhana of jnana. So the four Kumaras preached Gyan, but when Prithumaraj preached to the citizens in the previous chapter, when he was preparing for the sacrifice, he first addressed the citizens and he explained to them how to practice their karma, their occupational duties, in a perfect way, with their mind focused on the Lord, and they themselves renounce from the fruit of their work, just acting according to their duty for Krishna's pleasure, how that leads to bhakti, how that brings one to the platform of bhakti. So karma, if done properly, brings one to bhakti, and jnana, done properly, brings one to bhakti. And especially the prayers, but the instructions of the four Kumaras, explain so clearly that the essence of the process of getting out of all entanglement was to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, develop one's attachment. Before one can take shelter of the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, one has to become attached to Him by hearing and engaging in devotional service. And we heard that tape yesterday of Prabhupada explaining how one must gain that attachment to hearing. And that's what gives life to the temple. That's where the life is in the temple. Of course, the worship of the Sri Vigraha is life. But the glorification of Krishna through the kirtan. And we see this in Vrindavan, how, because there's so much, when Prabhupada was offered that land in Ramanreti, Vrindavan was quite different than it is now. Even when I moved there in 1983, Vrindavan wasn't even popular in India. It was quite peaceful, and then only during the month of Shravan, the month of July or so, some people would come, and then people would come to watch the Rasa Leela performances during the month of Shravan, and that was basically all. No one, Kartik wasn't especially popular, even amongst the Indians. And then when Prabhupada was offered the land, the devotees were thinking that it was too far out of town for people to come to. And then at some point, Vrindavan, really because of Prabhupada spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, it began to get very, very popular in India. And then some people used to come to the Krishna Balaram Mandir. And then, while we were there, Vrindavan itself, the popularity of Vrindavan, there was a resurgence in the feelings of the people of India towards Vrindavan, especially because of the Hare Krishna movement and other things as well. But there was a resurgence of that spirit. And then, after some time, Vrindavan, the Krishna Balaram Mandir, became very popular. And then, while we were living there, it was considered the second most popular temple, and so many people would come. But when I was there last time, it was different again. The popularity of Krishna Balaram Mandir had increased to the point that it was the most popular temple in Vrindavan. And not only that, but people all day long, and all afternoon long, and all night long, hundreds and hundreds of people, one after another, groups, individually, coming in front of the deities, coming in front of Srila Prabhupada, bowing down, offering the prayers, just continuously, quite incredibly. And one of the main reasons why the Krishna Balaram temple became especially popular was because of the kirtans. The evening aartis became so famous all over North India. And now they have the Akhand Kirtan, the continuous kirtan, the 24 hours a day kirtan. And so the temple is always full. The deity worship is spectacular. The deities are so well taken care of, clean, punctual, decorated with flowers, so many flowers, so fragrant. And people all the time, all day long, coming up with flower garlands to offer the deities and fruits and throwing some paisa or whatever. All day long, people offering flowers, getting back reciprocation of garlands and different things. So the temple is so much alive due to the kirtans, especially all the time, continuously kirtan. So that, as we heard Prabhupada explain, kirtan means the glorification of Krishna. So that gives life. It inspires people's hearts with a sense of bhakti. Sense of bhakti means, yes, I am Krishna's servant. I want to devote myself to Krishna. So that is the life. When there is no kirtan, recitation of Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, chanting the holy names, then there is no life in a temple or a church or a mosque. That's what Prabhupada was explaining. So Kumaras told that to Prithumaraj, that this was the process for awakening anyone. Everyone, even if one is materially entangled, this is the process. And all the results of jnana, everything comes. One is purified, one is liberated, and then one will take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord and cross the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord and cross the ocean. So of death, mrityu samsara vatmini, the ocean of death, very fearsome ocean. So when Prithumaraj heard the instructions of the Kumaras, he responded by expressing his inability to reciprocate with them for what they've given. Because if someone gives you something that will save you from death, what can you give him in return? What would be valuable to repay an eternal benefit, an eternal gift? What can compare with that in this world? And Prithumaraj said, this problem is compounded also because the whole world belongs to the Brahmanas, and you are the topmost Brahman. So how can I give you anything, because everything belongs to you anyway? So from one side, it would be an inappropriate reciprocation. And on the other side, everything belongs to you. But it is a token gift. But I am giving you, he offered his prayers and obeisances. And then he offered everything he had. He offered everything, basically, to the Kumaras, saying it was already them, theirs. So, after Prithu Maharaj spoke in this way, that please, he begged them, you be satisfied by your own activities. Because your own activities bring of preaching and being merciful to others are bring you happiness, and we can't reciprocate with you properly. So we pray you will be satisfied by the satisfaction that you've gotten by giving mercy. And we ourselves are expressing our appreciation for that mercy. So then we'll make our attempt to finish the chapter beginning with text 48. So the four Kumaras, after hearing the words of Prithu Maharaj spoken in response to their prayers, they became very pleased. And they appeared in the sky, and they praised the character of the king, and everyone could see them. Usually, common people aren't able to observe the four Kumaras, but by the grace of Prithu Maharaj, they were able. So amongst great personalities, so the remainder of the chapter is more or less in glorification of the rule of Prithu Maharaj, and then in the next chapter, we hear the glorious way in which Prithu Maharaj leaves this world. But now we will hear the glories of Prithu Maharaj and his kingdom and how he ruled. Amongst great personalities, Prithu Maharaj was the chief. Why was he such a great personality, the topmost, the chief? Why? By virtue of his fixed position in relationship to spiritual enlightenment. He was fixed in his dedication and his firm conviction and his activities. He was fixed in that. He remained satisfied as one who has achieved all success in spiritual understanding. So that was the source of his satisfaction, and that was what fixed him. If one is not satisfied, one cannot be fixed. Krishna bhakti nishkama eva shunta. Because a devotee is satisfied, and this will come up a little later, he is desireless. Maybe we can turn the fan on. Yeah? You want to open the window a little too? A little more. Prabhupada explains in his purport. Remaining fixed in devotional service gives one the utmost in self-satisfaction. Actually, self-satisfaction can be achieved only by pure devotees who have no desire other than to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since the Supreme Personality of Godhead has nothing to desire, he is fully satisfied with himself. Similarly, a devotee who has no desire other than to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead is as self-satisfied as the Supreme Lord. Everyone is hankering after peace of mind and self-satisfaction, but these can only be achieved by becoming a pure devotee of the Lord. Krishna bhakta nishkam ata eva shanta, because he has no desires, because his desires are to please Krishna, and Krishna's satisfaction, self-satisfaction, flows to him. Ata eva shanta, therefore he is peaceful. Bhukti mukti siddhi kama shakala Oshanta, that if we have desire to enjoy this world or to get out of this world or to gain powers in this world, Oshanta, Shakal, every one of them, Oshanta, no peace, because wanting something outside of oneself and one's relationship with Krishna. Being self-satisfied, Maharaj Prithu executed his duties as perfectly as possible according to his time and his situation, strength and financial position. So he did his duty as king. But why did he do that? His only aim in all his activities was to satisfy the absolute truth. He wanted to satisfy Krishna. That is what bhakti means. In this way, he duly acted. He dutifully acted in all his duties in such a way that Krishna will be satisfied. So this point is as to what bhakti is, acting for the satisfaction of Krishna. Jnana kama anavritam anya vilasita sunyam, no separate desire other than to satisfy Krishna. This is what pure devotional service is. So we said, it's very nice when we're doing something, whatever our service is. We all have different services and things that we do during the day. To think, now, if I were to do this just so Krishna will be pleased, how should I act? So just that mentality of doing it, of changing the mentality to doing it in such a way that I'm pleased, to doing it so Krishna pleased, that brings the external a change in the external activity. So whatever we're doing, we should do whatever our duties are to please Krishna. His only aim, Prithu Maharaj's, was to satisfy the absolute truth. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Prithu Maharaj was a responsible monarch, and he had to execute the duties of a kshatriya, king, and a devotee at the same time. Being perfect in the Lord's devotional service, he could execute his prescribed duties with complete perfection, as befitting the time and circumstances and his financial strength and personal ability. In this regard, the word kamani in this verse is significant. Prithu Maharaj's activities were not ordinary, for they were in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything he did was done to please Krishna, so they were not ordinary activities, regardless of what they looked like from the outside. Srila Rupa Goswami has advised that things which are favorable to devotional service should not be rejected, nor should activity favorable for devotional service be considered ordinary work or fruit of activity. For example, an ordinary worker conducts business in order to earn money for his sense gratification. A devotee may perform the same work in exactly the same way, but his aim is to satisfy the Supreme Lord, like Prithu Maharaj. Consequently, his activities are not ordinary. Prithu Maharaj's activities were therefore not ordinary, but were all spiritual and transcendental. For his aim was to satisfy the Lord, just as Arjuna, who was a warrior, had to fight to satisfy Krishna. Prithu Maharaj performed his royal duties as a king for the satisfaction of Krishna. Indeed, whatever he did as emperor, the whole world was perfectly befitting a pure devotee. It is therefore said by a Vaishnava poet, Vaishnaveda kriya mudra vigyena bujhaya. No one can understand the activities of a pure devotee. Text 51. So, Maharaj Prithu completely dedicated himself to be an eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, transcendental to material nature. Consequently, all the fruits of his activities were dedicated to the Lord, because he had preached to the citizens that they should perform their duties in a detached fashion, thinking of the Lord according to the Shastra for his pleasure. So he did the same thing. So he practiced as he preached. And he always, while doing this, thought of himself as the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of everything. So when one accepts that the Lord is the proprietor of everything, the owner of everything, then he is our owner, he is the owner of the fruits of the work, he is the owner of the, he is the, tell us how to do activities, etc. So he thought himself as a servant of that Lord. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The life and dedication of Prithu Maharaj is in the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, served as a good example of karma yoga. What does karma yoga mean? You know? The term karma yoga is often used in the Bhagavad Gita, and herein Prithu Maharaj is giving a practical example of what karma yoga actually is. The first requirement for the proper execution of karma yoga is given herein. Phalam brahmani sanyasya or vinasya. One must give the fruits of his activities to the Supreme Brahman, Parabrahman, Krishna. By doing so, one actually situates himself in the renounced order of life, sannyas. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18.2, giving up the fruits of one's activity to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called sannyas. So here, again, if one practices karma perfectly, one comes to the point of bhakti, giving up everything to Krishna. And similarly, if one practices jnana perfectly, as prescribed by the Kumaras, where one acts not as a body, but as a soul, liberated by transcendental knowledge of his relationship with Krishna, one also engages in bhakti. So the Bhagavad Gita defines what sannyas is as kamyanam kamanam nyasam sannyasam kavayo vidu sarvakama falatyagam prahus tyagam vichakshana. To give up the results of all activities is called renunciation, tyag by the wise. And that state is called the renounced order of life, sannyas, by great learned men. When sannyas means when you work but give up the fruit of the work fully to Krishna. Although he was living as a householder, Prithu Maharaj was actually in the renounced order of life, sannyas. This will be clearer in the following verses. The word nivashanga, uncontaminated, is very, very significant because Maharaj Prithu was not attached to the results of his activities. In this material world, a person... See, this is, was important because this is the general preaching to the general mass of people as Prithu Maharaj preached to the citizens is karma fal tyag, or giving up the fruits of one's activities. This is the basic preaching of ISKCON. Karma eva lukadas tema paleshu kadatsa. That one should work hard, but be detached from the fruit of one's work, and as one is remembering Krishna and remembering himself as a servant of Krishna, one should renounce the fruit of one's work for Krishna, the fruit of one's hard work. That is the basic preaching. When the fruits... In this material world, a person is always thinking of the proprietorship of everything he accumulates or works for. When the fruit of one's activities are rendered to the service of the Lord, one is actually practicing karma yoga. Anyone can practice karma yoga, but it is especially easy for the householders who can install a deity of the Lord in the home and worship him according to the methods of bhakti yoga. This method includes 9 items: hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping the deity, praying, carrying out orders, serving Krishna as friend, and sacrificing everything for him. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, Smaranam Parasevanam, Archanam Vandanam Dasyam, Sakyam Atmanavedanam. These methods of Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga are being broadcast all over the world by the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Anyone can learn these methods simply by following the examples of the members of the society. So the members of the society have the obligation, even if one can't be on the highest level of pure bhakti, but one really should be on this level at least, of nishkam kam, or kama phal tyag, or renunciation of the fruits of one's work, detachment, working hard, and giving the fruit to Krishna. That's the proper level for the members of the society, especially those living in the temples. Then later on in the purport, generally liberation takes place after one gives up this body. The one who lives according to the example of Prithu Maharaj is liberated even in this lifetime. In Krishna consciousness, the results of one's activities depend on the will of the Supreme Person. Ultimately, we are completely dependent on Krishna for everything. We work and work and work, but it is not our work that brings the results exactly. Yes, we must work, and if we don't work, results will not come. But it is not the work that brings the result. It's ultimately Krishna's sanction. If he does, it's not the work alone. We see so many people working so hard, and one person is poor and one person is wealthy. It's not the work. So everything ultimately depends on the will of the Supreme Person. Indeed, in all cases, the result is not dependent on one's personal dexterity, but is completely dependent on the will of the Supreme. This is the real significance of Phalam Ramani Sanyasya. A soul dedicated to the service of the Lord should never think of himself as the personal proprietor or the superintendent. A dedicated devotee should prosecute his work according to the rules and regulations described in devotional service. The results of his activities are completely dependent on the supreme will of the Lord. Next verse, 52. Prithu Maharaj, who is very opulent due to the prosperity of his entire empire, remained at home as a householder. And there were no phones to answer, so it was a relief. Since he was never inclined to utilize his opulences for the gratification of his senses, he remained unattached, exactly like the sun, which is unaffected in all circumstances. He was so opulent, but he used everything in Krishna's service. Being situated in the liberated position of devotional service, Prithu Maharaj not only performed all fruitive activities, he performed all the sacrifices which would normally be considered fruitive. And we hear this also in the fifth canto, how Bharat Maharaj, when he was the king, he set the example for the citizens by himself performing sacrifices. But he wasn't attached, so he did it. He performed the fruitive activities, but not with a fruitive mentality. But also, not only did he do that, he begot five sons by his wife Archie. Indeed, all his sons were begotten according to his own desire. So he performed the proper sanskaras, and the sons were very pure and powerful. After begetting five sons, and their names were Vijitasra, Dhumrakesh, Hariyaksha, Dravina, and Brika. After these were the five sons, Prithu Maharaj continued to rule the planet. He accepted all the qualities of the deities who governed all other planets. So he was so powerful that the deities of the other planets, the demigods ruling the other planets, bestowed upon him their powers. So how powerful he was. 55. Since Prithu Maharaj was a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he wanted to protect the Lord's creation by pleasing the various citizens according to their various desires. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj used to please them in all respects by his words, mentality, works, and gentle behavior. We'll read about a third of the way of Prabhupada's purport till the end of the purport. Although this material world is condemned when it is compared to the spiritual world, there is still some purpose behind it. Usually we condemn the material world. But that type of preaching is more like jnanis. It is to break our attachment to the material world. Well, in actuality, the material world is Krishna's and has a purpose, and its purpose is that it should be used in Krishna's service. But it also has another angle on the purpose, and we'll hear about that now. Why the actual purpose of the material world and the benefit of being in the material world in a material body, even though we are not our material body and we are spirit souls. There is some purpose behind the material world. Modern scientists and philosophers cannot understand that purpose, nor do they believe in the existence of a creator. They try to establish everything by their so-called scientific research, but they do not center anything around the supreme creator. Just imagine if there was some wheat growing in the field, and someone studied the wheat very, very carefully, scientifically studied the wheat. Would it be possible to understand just by studying the wheat itself, that somebody had planted that wheat so he could harvest it and grow grains and then grind the grains and make chapatis? So you couldn't understand that. You'd have to find the person who planted it, who created the wheat fields, to know that. So the scientists cannot understand the purpose in that way, because the methodology, it neglects the creator. A devotee, however, can understand the purpose of creation, which is to give facilities to the individual living entities who want to lord it over material nature. The ruler of this planet should therefore know that all the inhabitants, especially human beings, have come to this material world for sense enjoyment. It is therefore the duty of the ruler to satisfy them in their sense enjoyment, as well as to elevate them to Krishna consciousness so that they can ultimately return home back to Godhead. This is the basic principle of governance. Not that everyone should be austere and everyone should become so exalted. It's impossible for everyone to become so exalted. It would be wonderful if everyone could, but it is not so easy. People have their material desires. So the king has to rule the citizens, the country, in such a way that people can satisfy their material desires, but not in a hedonistical way that will degrade them, but in a shastric, goodness type of way that will elevate them so that they can fulfill the other purpose of the material world, is to advance in Krishna consciousness. So elevate them to Krishna consciousness so that they can ultimately return home back to Godhead. With this idea in mind, the king or government head should rule the world. In this way, everyone will be satisfied. How can this be accomplished? There are many examples like Prithviraj, and the history of his regency on this planet is elaborately described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Even in this fallen age, if the rulers, governors, or presidents take advantage of Prithviraj's example, there will certainly be a reign of peace and prosperity throughout the world. Text 56. Maharaj Prithu became as celebrated a king as Somaraj, the king of the moon. He was also powerful and exacting, just like the sun god, who distributes heat and light and at the same time exacts all the planetary waters. Maharaj Prithu was so strong and powerful that no one could disobey his orders, any more than one could conquer fire itself. He was so strong that he is compared to Indra, the king of heaven, whose power is insuperable. On the other hand, Prithu Maharaj was as tolerant as the earth. And in fulfilling various desires of human society, he was like heaven itself. Just as rainfall satisfies everyone's desires, Maharaj Prithu used to satisfy everyone. He was like the sea, and that no one could understand his depths. And he was like Meru, the king of hills, in the fixity of his purpose. Maharaj Prithu's intelligence and education were exactly like that of Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, because Yamaraj is an expert judicial judge. He judges everyone perfectly. So his Maharaj Prithu is expert in his dealing in that sense. His opulence was compared to the Himalayan mountains, where all valuable jewels and metals are stocked. He possessed great riches like Kuvera, the treasurer of the heavenly planets, and no one could reveal his secrets, for they were like the demigod Varunas. So where is the demigod Varuna? Deep, deep within the ocean. No one can understand what is going on truly in the ocean depths. So no one can understand simply the plans and secrets hidden within the depths of the mind and heart of Prithu. In his bodily strength and in the strength of his senses, Maharaj Prithu was as strong as the wind, which can go anywhere and everywhere. So in this way, the deities, the predominating deities of the different planets had blessed them with their potencies. He was as strong as the wind, which can go anywhere and everywhere. As far as his intolerance was concerned, he was just like all-powerful Rudra expansion of Lord Shiva or Sarashiva. In his bodily beauty, he was like Cupid. And in his thoughtfulness, he was like a lion. In his affection, he was just like Swayambhuva Manu. And in his ability to control, he was like Lord Brahma. In his personal behavior, Prithu Maharaj exhibited all good qualities. And in spiritual knowledge, he was exactly like Brihaspati. In self-control, he was like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, himself. And as far as his devotional service was concerned, he was a great follower of devotees who were attached to cow protection and the rendering of all service to the spiritual master and the brahmanas. He was perfect in his shyness and in his gentle behavior. And when he engaged in some philanthropic activity, he worked as if he were working for his own personal self. When he was working for others, he worked as if he was working for his own self. Because usually when people are working for themselves, you see this when people have jobs. You know, the people who get paid for digging holes out in the street by the hour. They get paid by the hour, and there's eight people standing supervising the one person working or something like that. Because when you're working for someone else, it's completely different from when you're working for yourself. But when Prithu Maharaj engaged in philanthropic activities, which by definition are for others, he worked as if he was working for his own personal self. Prabhupada's purport will read the first half of that. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talked to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the Lord honored him as the incarnation of Brihaspati. Brihaspati is the chief priest in the heavenly kingdom, and he is a follower of the philosophy known as Brahmavad or Mayavad. Brihaspati is also a great logician. It appears from this statement that Maharaj Prithu, although a great devotee, constantly engaged in the loving service of the Lord, he could defeat all kinds of impersonalists and Mayavadis by his profound knowledge of Vedic scriptures. We should learn from Prithu Maharaj that a Vaishnava or devotee must not only be fixed in the service of the Lord, but if required, he must be prepared to argue with the impersonalist Mayavadis with all logic and philosophy and defeat their contention that the Absolute Truth is impersonal. Did you have to do a lot of that kind of preaching in India when you were in Patna? As soon as they saw you, they would not argue. They understood. Fear entered their heart. No? They were touched by your humility. So. That was all. You didn't preach to anyone? So how did you do that without preaching? Only on the surface. What did he say? Huh? Hello, Haribol, Paise, give something for Krishna. Well, should have challenged him. No? They would have given you their heart. You didn't want their heart. Okay. Anyway, this is the instruction. You should be prepared to argue with the impersonalist Mayavadis and with all logic and philosophy defeat their contention the absolute truth is impersonal. Okay? From now on? Then you'll argue. Okay. You bash people with the philosophy, with the books, or literally, huh? Sounds like you understand the system quite well. So it's a proper time and place. You have to be prepared to argue, okay? Thank you. Throughout the whole, and this is the last verse. Throughout the whole universe, in the higher, lower, and middle planetary systems, Prithu Maharaj's reputation was loudly declared, and all the ladies and saintly persons heard his glories, which were as sweet as the glories of Lord Ramachandra. Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the words Srinam and Rama are significant. It is the practice among ladies to hear and enjoy the praise of certain heroes. From this verse, it appears that Prithu Maharaj's reputation was so great that ladies all over the universe would hear of it with great pleasure. At the same time, his glories were heard all over the universe by the devotees, and they were as pleasing as Lord Ramachandra's glories. Lord Ramachandra's kingdom is still existing, and recently there was a political party in India named the Ramaraj Party, which wanted to establish a kingdom resembling the kingdom of Ram. Unfortunately, modern politicians want the kingdom of Ram without Ram. Without Ram himself. Although they have banished the idea of God consciousness, they still expect to establish a kingdom of Ram. Such a proposal is rejected by devotees. Prithu Maharaj's reputation was heard by saintly persons because he exactly represented Lord Ramachandra, the ideal king. So thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fourth canto, 22nd chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Prithu Maharaj's Meeting with the Four Kumaras. So we have finished the 22nd chapter, and there is one more chapter about Prithu Maharaj. The next chapter, we'll begin that next week, and that's the final chapter about Prithu Maharaj, 39 verses, which describes Prithu Maharaj as going back home, back to Godhead. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yep.
Thank you very much. How are the thoughtfulness of a great king be compared to a lion?
Well, he's the king of beasts. So he's only active. When you think of a lion, what do you think of? What pose do you think of him in?
Seated on his haunches.
He's seated like this, right? With his head up, his great mane. Contemplating his kingdom. Or whatever. He's not always just running and doing things. He's sitting there contemplating. He's king. That's all I can think of, isn't it? That's his pose. He's noble. Lions have very, very noble demeanor. They're not like monkeys who are running all around, jumping everywhere, or not at all grave and thoughtful. They're active and foolish. And thus the term monkey business. anything a monkey does is useless, just to cause trouble. Sometimes the monkeys, you see them, they'll just go to a tree and just shake it. Or they'll go and they'll be on the banister or some railing and they'll just try to shake it. And sometimes they'll go up on the roof if people's clothes are there. They'll just go up there and rip them apart. Not thoughtful, just like monkeys. Any other questions or comments? Okay.
How we can get ready to refuting person is someone has an inclination to want to.
Well, first, at least study, there's so many arguments given. Nivashesha sunyavadi prashkatya desatarane. There's at every opportunity to give a kick to impersonalist, Prabhupada does that. So his books are full of so many arguments against impersonalism, using shastra and knowledge and logic. So many arguments are there. But someone who's really deeply a Mayavadi, you can't change their mind, because they're a great offender. Therefore, all you can do is, like Sahasra was saying, just take their money. So that was deep compassion. Knowing that there's no use arguing with such people, you're making them more offensive. So just engage their money in Krishna's service. So this is the compassionate heart of a Vaishnava.
Apart from that,
but why didn't you preach to them? You were telling me they were deeply Mayavadis, so I said that. Now when I say that, you say they're not deeply Mayavadis. Well, which is it? Are they deeply Mayavadis or not? Then why did you preach to the ones that weren't? Why were you just trying to take their money? Because they didn't have time.
When you ask them, they say, so many wouldn't even have time to die. And you tell us to come to the temple. They are so much busy and making money.
They don't have time to die? That's what they said. How many said that? So many.
95% of the population, and when I go to touch with them,
they're too busy.
They don't have time to discuss.
So therefore, if you would have waited till they went to the temple,
you would have died.
You would have died waiting of all days. So therefore, you so kindly you went to visit them in their orifice. Yes, you went to their office. Did you give them prasad? So kind. And they worked so hard to get some money, some fruit of the work, and you gave that to the service of Krishna. So kind. Never mind, we have our philosophical differences maybe. You don't have time, but at least you work so hard so you can give some money. So kind. Vansha kalpa turubhyascha kripa sindhu vayavacha patitram
bhavati. Aren't you going to say something?
He's too tired, actually. That's the only reason I have. Yes? You're tired today? No, of course. That's why they reciprocated on you by giving you money, because they perceived your inherent respect and affection for them. Because that's the nature of a Vaishnava. There's respect for all living entities. Chinatapis. No! That's what I'm saying. Because they understood your deep appreciation for them and your inherent respect for them, therefore they respected you. This is perfect psychology. Such humility. No.
Deeper.
Any other questions? Yes.
The point that you mentioned earlier about that the devotees have an obligation to present the Krishna consciousness movement in a way that properly reflects Krishna consciousness. Is that related to what?
I don't remember talking about that though.
You mentioned that, was it that the devotees have a standard, the devotees are the standard in society, and therefore.
Are the standard?
Yeah.
I don't remember
the
standard. Self-satisfying?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't remember what I. I've lost that frame of reference. Was the question was what I meant?
From that perspective, of the practical side of that in relation to the philosophy that we learn, and the preaching movement, it seems to be on the one side, there's all what we read about the Gita and Mahaprabhu and so on and so forth. And then on the other side, there's a preaching movement, or their devotees, or their people interested in the absolute truth, they have a responsibility to enlighten other people on this platform.
I remember what I said. They have a responsibility to be on the Nishkam platform. That's what I said.
So
detached.
How those two linked?
I can't. Which was the other one? What I was saying is that the devotees have to be on the Nishkam platform, especially if they're living in the temple. Why? Is because people give donations, and if they see that the money is being used for the deities and for the preaching, then they become pleased. But if they see that the devotees living in the temple are taking it, then they become very displeased naturally. So therefore, to live in the temple means that really one should be on the least Nishkam platform, like that, that one is detached and doing working but detached. That's what I was talking about.
That's perfectly answers my question. And another point is about the practicality, because like switching off the fan or the lights or whatever and being very practical about.
Oh yeah, one has to be practical. Yeah, one has to be practical. One has to take what one needs.
Then how does that relate to being detached?
One shouldn't take one more than one needs. One has to live simply. But doesn't mean that one should live. One has a right to take what he needs on the simple level, and that's practical. One shouldn't act impractically. And try to be more detached and renounced than we actually are. Yeah.
From yesterday, I wanted to ask this question. In the Vedic system, as it stands properly, just like in this example of Prithu Maharaj, how the Brahmins regulated in their activities? In other words, Brahmins, they check the Kshatriyas, and the Kshatriyas make sure that the Vaishyas are doing their duties.
But it's the Kshatriya's duties to make sure that the Brahmins are doing their duties too. Even the Brahmins. That's their duty. But they're above any recrimination. There's no punishment or anything, but yet it's their duty to provide the facilities especially and to ensure that the Brahmins are also doing their duties, asking if there's anything they need, etc. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
The point here that Prithu Maharaj protected the Lord's creation by pleasing the various citizens?
Protected the Lord's
creation.
Yeah.
Does that mean that just when the people are satisfied, there's peace and they're safe or not?
Well, because the people have their material needs. He has to make sure that those material needs are satisfied. He has to. at least on the basic level. That's his first job. We saw that when there wasn't food for the citizens, he became furious. And he made sure there was proper food. So the material needs have to be satisfied because the people are in the material world. One time when Prabhupada was traveling through Bangkok many years ago, he actually said that the people were too poor to take to Krishna consciousness. Meaning that he has also said that poverty brings out the worst in a man. So when one is very poor, it's hard to think of anything other than how am I going to get money? Money, 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 money. So for the general people, those basic needs have to be satisfied so that they can think of higher truths as well. So the end isn't to get the basic needs, but it's required that those people need to get eat, have sufficient money, have family, shelter, like that. Everything done in a way that people are not in anxiety. So the purpose of creation, which is, that's half the purpose, so people can fulfill those desires, but so that they can become elevated in Krishna consciousness, so that can be fulfilled. That's the idea. See, and that's the wrong thing about doing what, if the people should live very, very simply, but if people are living artificially simply, then they're only going to be thinking about material things, even in the temple. So if people are going to be living in the temple even very austerely, then the heat of the Krishna consciousness has to be high enough so that they're feeling satisfied from that side too. So, tricky balance. But, okay, let's stop now. It's 8 o'clock. So we'll meet again if Krishna allows. Hopefully he will. We'll meet again next Wednesday. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Pitamarat ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.